Greetings and welcome back to OU.org and www.etshalom.com. My name is Yitzchak Etshalom, and it is my pleasure to be studying Sefer Shmuel with you. Today we're going to study Shmuel Bet Perek Chet, which is a short perek, a not well-known or frequently studied perek, although it is monumental in the presentation of David's military conquests, and indeed seems to be the apex of his power, and several subtexts roll through this perek, having to do with David's lineage and his relationship to his lineage, as we will see. Nonetheless, the perek is also difficult to study because there are several phrases in the perek which are hepax legamana. They are singular in the text and do not show up elsewhere in Tanakh, and as such are somewhat difficult to interpret. So this is after David was promised by Hashem that he will have a dynasty. David slew the Plishtim, he smote the Plishtim, and he subdued the Plishtim, he subjugated them. This seems to be the last time that we will hear of the Plishtim. Kach David meteg ha'ama miad Plishtim. That phrase, meteg ha'ama, is singular in the text, does not show up anywhere else, and seems to be something related, at least in its original meaning, to a halter or a rein that one would hold on an animal, and yet here, in this context, that makes no sense, so it seems to be a reference to holding the controls over the Plishtim, which may refer to a conquest of the city of Gat, which was, as we've seen throughout, the central city of the Plishtim. And then, now, that is battle number one of David. And remember, the Plishtim were David's first enemy. The Plishtim were also David's apparent comrades in arms when he was hiding and incognito in Eretz Pleshet. They were the first to attack him when he became king in Yerushalayim, and he twice defended the city and defended himself. And now he comes and he subdues them. Now, Vayachet Moav. As long as we're in the south, he goes to the southeast and smites Moab. Chachamim say that the reason he smote Moab was out of vengeance because he had, if you recall, way back in the beginning of his travels, had presented his parents to the king of Moab that he should take care of them. And according to rabbinic tradition, the king killed David's parents, so this is his revenge. Another way of looking at it, though, may be for David to be demonstrating that his personal familial ties with Moab, and we'll see this come up again in the perek, are not going to get in the way of him ruling correctly, and indeed he may be sort of erasing those ties by smiting Moab. Vayimaddeim b'chevel hashkevotam arza, and he literally lay them down with a rope, all of the captives. Vayimaddeid shnei chevelim lamit u'melo hachevel achayot. Two ropes worth of men were killed, and one rope was spared. In other words, he killed two-thirds of them, and one-third he spared. It may mean, alternatively, that he did this by lottery. And so, you could ask the question, why kill so many? So it puts the fear into the others. Why not kill them all? Because then they were servants of his who presented him with tributes. Now, David's attack against Moab again is again the connection of the family. And now David went to the north, to Syria. It's unclear whether this is Hadad-Ezer was on his way to go visit the Prat River, and therefore was vulnerable, or David was on his way to visit the Prat River, and while he went there, that's the Euphrates, on the way there he stopped and he defeated Hadad-Ezer. He conquered 1,700 cavalrymen and 20,000 infantrymen. David lamed the chariots. A little strange phrase. What it really means, evidently, is he lamed the horses who led the chariots. He left 100 of them in unlamed. Aram Damasek, and then he came to then Aram Damasek, which is Aram is the whole area. Aram Damasek is the area specifically of Damascus. Came to help because after all they're neighbors and they're all under the threat of David. 22,000 elephish, and David slew 22,000 men in Aram. Now, Aram again goes back to family. That's, of course, where we come from. And David then placed garrisons or governors in Aram Damascus. And now Aram were servants who were bringing tribute. And to sum up all of these last few psukim, David saved, Hashem saved David everywhere he went. David took the golden, evidently these are golden shields that Hadadezer's servants had, and he brought them to Shalim, again a trophy of his victory. And these are cities of Hadadezer. David took lots of copper. In other words, there's lots of metals, precious metals that are coming into Shalim as spoils of war. And remember what just happened in Parag Zion. David expressed his great desire to build a house to Hashem, which Hashem said will only be built by his son, and it could be that David is now beginning to store up precious metals for that use. We'll see why that may come out. Vayishma Toi Melech Hamat. Hamat is an area near the Golan. And the king of Hamat heard Kika David call Chel Hadarazer. And he heard that David had conquered. Sorry, this is much farther north in the Hermon, Levo Hamat. So Toi, who lived much further north than this is in northern Syria, southern Turkey already, that David had slaughtered Hadadezer's troops. Vayishlach Toi et Yoram beno al Melech David. So Toi sent his son, Lisholo l'shalom uvarcho. He wanted to greet David, to bless him. In other words, to create a treaty. Al asher nocham Hadadezer ve'akehu. That David fought Hadadezer and killed him. Ki ish b'chamal Toi hadaya Hadadezer. In other words, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. The Toi and Hadadezer had always been enemies. Now that David killed Hadadezer, Toi felt indebted to David and grateful to him. And again, we have silver and gold and copper coming into Shalim. And now the text points out, Gam otam hikdish ha-melech David l'Adonai. David also sanctified these to Hashem, meaning it sanctified all of the other earlier metals that had come in. So in other words, we understand why Perek Chet is following on the heels of Perek Zion. That even though Hashem said to David, and David was certainly disappointed, that he himself would not live to see the Beit HaMikdash, would not be able to build it himself, he now begins to accumulate precious metals for that glorious house that his son will build by conquering the nations around him and despoiling them. Me'aram u'memoav u'mnei Amon. Right, Ne'amon we're going to hear about in a couple of parakim and in a war that will turn the tide of David's monarchy. Umpushtim ume Amalek. Amalek was what we heard about back in Perak Lamed of Shmuel Aleph. Umishlah Hadadezer ben Rechov Melech Tzova, also from the spoils of Hadadezer. They asked David shame, and David now made a monument. Bishvomi Hakatot Aram Begay Melech Shmona Asar Aleph. Evidently he had taken 18,000 men there. He also set up Netzivim in Edom. Now, Edom is in the south of Moab, but Edom also has an association, because if you recall, Edom is populated by the children of Esav. And we saw several places in the introduction of David that David seemed to be presented in Esavian terms. First of all, David and Esav are the only two in Tanakh who are called Admoni, ruddy. Second thing is that David comes with 400 men, just as Esav came with 400 men. And again, it's an entourage that only shows up in the case of these two. And here, David, who has Esav's powers, the power of war, and etc., nonetheless comes and conquers Edom, perhaps to show that mastery, just as he did with Moab, just as he did with Pelishtim. In other words, pieces of his past now are coming together and are coming under his subjugation. B'chol Edom sam netzivim, he put governors throughout Edom. V'yichol Edom avadim lo David. They're all avadim. V'yosha Adonai David b'chol asher alach. And again, we say Hashem saved David everywhere he went. V'och David al kol Yisrael, v'yidavid osem mishpat utzlaka l'chol amo. In the meantime, David ruled over Israel, meaning do not think that David spent all of his time conquering foreign countries and ignoring domestic issues, but rather he ruled over Israel, and he did mishpat utzlaka l'chol amo. He took care of justice for all of his people. So indeed, David now is ruling, as Shaul never did, the full complement of monarchic responsibilities, taking care of security, taking care of building up the national fund and the national treasury, and taking care of domestic policy. And now we hear a brief note about David's inner cabinet. He's the chief of staff. He's evidently the secretary in David's cabinet. They are the proper Kohanim, who are offering evidently in front of the Aron that's now in the tent. He's the court scribe. These are the chief general. And the Kretiva Pleiti, which nobody really knows what these are, but these are evidently select group of fighters. Uvnei David Kohanim Hayu. David's sons were Kohanim. Now, Uvnei David Kohanim Hayu, of course, cannot mean Kohanim literally. So there are two ways to approach it. One way is it just means that they were great people and honored people. This is something that's mentioned in connection to the Parsha that, if you listen to this live, is this week's Parsha, which is Yitro Kohen Midyan. The idea that he was an important person, that Kohen is also a name for an important person, not just for a ritual functionary, is possibility one. Possibility two is that David's sons, during this time when there was Heter Bamot, because the Mikdash had not yet been built, were indeed offering up Korbanot, because indeed Ein Kohen Babama, this according to several authorities and several commentators on our text. In any case, we've completed this short but impactful perek. And the next parak that we have will be not as impactful and shorter. Parak Tet is what we will study the next time we meet. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day. Shalom.